Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm not sure who was involved. We have some ideas as to who might be involved, but we don't know exactly who was involved.
That was Defense Secretary Leon Panetta conjecturing yesterday to soldiers at Fort Bliss about the assassination of an Iranian scientist. The body of the chemist, Mostafa Ahmadi Roshan, was buried this morning, but the finger-pointing and tension over his death continues. By now, you've likely heard the outline of the dramatic story. He was killed on Wednesday in Tehran by a magnetic bomb placed on his car by two assassins on a motorcycle as he was on his way back to work. He was director of a uranium enrichment plant and the fifth Iranian nuclear scientist in 2 years to be killed in a spy thriller-style attack. Coincidence? Why do we doubt it? The questions now are, who was behind the attack? Israel, the United States, Iran itself? And what effect do these assassinations have on Iran's nuclear development? Joining now from Washington is Scott Shane, national security correspondent for The New York Times. Welcome back to WNYC, Scott.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
And Farnaz Fasihi joins us from Beirut. She is Middle East correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Welcome back, Farnaz.
Thank you, Brian.
Scott Shane, this latest attack seems to fit a pattern of assassins on motorcycles wielding magnetic bombs. So this has happened before?
This has happened before. Since 2007, there have been at least five scientists killed and a sixth one injured. There's been a little bit of a range of attacks. I think one guy was shot with guns. Lately, the mode has been this sort of guys on motorcycles speeding through traffic, attaching a magnetic bomb to the car, apparently a fairly high-tech bomb that is directed into the car, doesn't, you know, take out a whole swath of traffic. So what certainly looks like a very sophisticated attack.
Farnaz, Iran is pointing fingers at Israel and the United States. I don't know what Leon Panetta was exactly getting at in the clip that we played. I'm not sure who was involved. We have some ideas as to who might be involved. We don't know exactly who was involved. Maybe he's implying that Iran itself did it. Would it have been difficult for Israel or the United States to do this on the streets of Tehran?
I think it would be very difficult to carry out these sort of assassinations on a foreign soil, particularly in Iran, where it's a near police state. The security and intelligence apparatus is very strong. That's why people are suspicious that it might be Israel. A lot of analysts we speak to and some diplomats have also raised the question of whether Israel might be involved, because they have done this in other countries in the past, and these kind of assassinations require a very sophisticated and well-trained network.
Scott Shane, Le Figaro reported this week, the Italian newspaper, just before the attack, French newspaper? French newspaper, Le Figaro,
yeah.
That Israel's intelligence wing, Mossad, had been recruiting Iranian dissidents from the Kurdish region to work against the nuclear program in Iran. Is there speculation that Iranians are participating in these attacks? And beyond speculation, is there any evidence?
I think on the last question, is there any evidence, I think the answer is no. I mean, this is the subject, as you suggest, of widespread speculation. And I would say based on, you know, just talking to a bunch of experts with various backgrounds, talking to a former Israeli intelligence official, talking to a bunch of American intelligence officials, that the leading theory is that this is Israel. Then there are sort of sub-theories that this is perhaps Israelis using the MEK, which is the radical Iranian opposition group, many of whose members are now in a camp in Iraq, or alternatively, as you suggest, using Iranian Kurds as go-betweens, as cutouts. And then there's the alternate theory that this would be very difficult even for Israel to pull off, and that the more likely scenario is that these scientists had come to not be trusted by the Iranian regime. Either they thought they were talking to the West, or they weren't following orders, or they weren't sufficiently loyal, or they were too close to the Green Movement, the Iranian opposition, and therefore Iran itself was taking them out, blaming the West and Israel, which of course, you know, sort of makes it a twofer for the regime. But again, in Washington here, most of the speculation is that this is Israel very determined to slow down progress towards what Israel and Washington, in fact, think is a nuclear weapons program.
Farnaz, if that's the case, why isn't Iran protecting their scientists a little better? Five scientists in 2 years.
Well, you know, Tehran is a very big country. It's a city, is a big city. It's a city of 15 million people. So I think it would be difficult to protect everybody at any given time. I think there's an argument, and you see that in today's papers in Iran, that these scientists should be given personal security detail and they should be protected. But again, it's difficult to predict these things, but it does suggest that you know, whoever is behind it has a lot of inside information and possibly some participation from Iranians inside.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton responded to the allegations that the United States was behind this by issuing this categorical denial.
I want to categorically deny any United States involvement in any kind of act of violence inside Iran.
Scott Shane in Washington, I was struck by the end of that clip in which she says, inside Iran, a categorical denial of any U.S. involvement in any kind of act of violence inside Iran. Mm-hmm. Does it limit her denial in any way by the fact that she said inside Iran?
You're a very suspicious person. I mean, actually, what struck me about that statement, and a similar statement came from the White House, was how categorical, which was her word, of course, how categorical it was, how strong the condemnation was. Because I went back and looked at what the U.S. had said after the previous assassinations of scientists in Iran. And in general, they were limited to the State Department spokesman saying, issuing a fairly bland, generic condemnation along the lines of the U.S., you know, regrets the loss of any innocent life. But it was very low-key, and it led to the general impression that if Israel was doing this, they were doing it with sort of the tacit approval, if not the assistance, of the United States. This time, the tone was very different. And in fact, the day began with the State Department spokeswoman giving one of those generic condemnations as in the past. And then the state actually issued a clarification. This was sort of overshadowed because then Secretary of State Clinton made her own statement. But before that, the State Department had issued a clarification with a much stronger condemnation. So, you know, this is all speculative, but it appeared that the United States was eager to distance itself from this latest assassination. And you have to wonder why. Is it because we're afraid that this kind of activity could torpedo the possibility of negotiations as we squeeze Iran with sanctions over its nuclear program? Or is it possible that, you know, the U.S. is just believes that this is Israel and thinks it's counterproductive in some other way? So, or that, you know, the U.S. just doesn't want to be seen as sort of conniving in the assassination of scientists in a country where we're not at war, which, according to some lawyers I've consulted, would certainly appear to violate a U.S. ban on assassinations outside of the realm of war.
So, Farnaz in Beirut, what has Israel said? Has its denial been stronger than usual after similar such incidents?
Israel hasn't even denied it, Brian. Israel has said that they will not comment, they will neither confirm nor deny, even, you know, kind of feeding the speculation. I think that the Israelis are deliberately pursuing an ambiguous kind of a policy to make it seem, even if if it's not them, that it might be them, to put Iran on the edge. And, you know, a lot of this is psychological warfare. I don't think that four or five scientists are going to seriously set back Iran's nuclear program. But I think that it's sort of telling Iran that, look, if you're going to pursue this and insist on this program, then there's a price to pay, and we are going to, you know, have what's appearing to be not such a covert war against your nuclear program.
So
Israel is, I think, deliberately being ambiguous.
So, Scott Shane, what's the point of these assassinations if it is indeed Israel and the United States? Would they actually do anything to slow Iran's nuclear progress?
Well, as Farnaz points out, this is not likely. This is, you know, there's hundreds of scientists working on the program. So to bump off, you know, a handful, relatively speaking, is not likely to have, you know, to derail the program. But it certainly presumably would hurt recruitment in Iran of scientists if you thought there was a danger of being assassinated. It certainly sends a message of sort of determination to stop the program. And I guess we should say that the assassinations are part of a much broader covert campaign to slow or stop the nuclear program. Certainly the non-lethal parts do have U.S. participation. There was that computer worm called Stuxnet a couple of years ago that is said to have you know, sort of infiltrated the software and destroyed a bunch of centrifuges that Iran was using to enrich uranium. There have been a number of scientists who've defected, in some cases at least with the encouragement of the CIA. There was also a very large explosion at a missile base in November in Iran that killed the general head of the missile program and 16 other people. So, you know, whether all of this put together can slow the program, you know, considerably is certainly up for debate in the West. But I guess the other thing that you hear from experts is that if the U.S. or Israel were actually to launch airstrikes, bombing runs on the known Iranian nuclear sites, by most calculations, that too would not stop the program. It might set it back by a couple of years. So the argument has been, or some people would certainly argue, that this campaign of sabotage and assassination, you know, may be as effective as airstrikes and does not generate the what you know most people perceive would be probably a serious threat of outright war and certainly condemnation around the world, perhaps retaliation against Israel or the United States, whoever did this, in a number of other countries as well.
And, Scott, we have a question on our comments page from a listener who asks, what are the chances that this bombing was in retaliation for Iran's death sentence to the former military translator who was allegedly visiting his grandmother?
Well, I have certainly been told by a number of American officials that we had, and they've said it publicly, that the United States had nothing to do with this assassination. So if it was in retaliation for the death sentence, it was coming from somewhere else, apparently. There has been, Iran's side of what we may call this covert war has been to take a series of hostages, essentially, Iranian-American scholars, those three hikers. There's been there was an NPR reporter, and now there is this former military guy who was, by his own account, trying to visit his grandmother and got grabbed and accused of being CIA and sentenced to death. But that's been an ongoing sort of campaign on Iran's side and seems to be, you know, their side of this hostile relationship.
So, Farnaz, before you go, you reported last week that the Iranian government was clamping down on the Internet. What are the new regulations?
Right. The new regulations say that anybody who uses an internet cafe has to fill out a form giving their national ID number, which is essentially like a social security number where you can be tracked. You have to write down your name, your father's name, your address, your phone number, and then the owner of the internet cafe is obliged to monitor what websites you use and your web traffic and keep a log of that for 6 months and install a camera so they could identify who's behind which machine. This is done because a lot of the activists go to internet cafes because they don't want to be traced at home. So they go to internet cafes, they use VPNs and other means of trying to get to a secure website, and they send out the information through internet cafes. You know, there's a huge backlash in the Iranian online community and also among activists who worry that these new regulations are going to seriously make it difficult for them to get information out and to organize and to communicate with one another.
Well, the situation inside Iran seems to get more complicated, and the complicated relationship between Iran and the United States seems to get more complicated all the time. Farnaz Fahisi from The Wall Street Journal in Beirut, Scott Chain from The New York Times in Washington. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a call-in for African-American parents, and you can call in right now. What would it mean for you for education to be a civil right? In 1954, it meant segregation needed to end. What does it mean today? 212-433-WNYC. As we go into Martin Luther King Day weekend, we're going to be doing an event on Sunday at the Brooklyn Museum, and we'll play excerpts on this show on Monday on education as a civil right in 2012. And we want to hear from African-American parents. We did a segment on the show last hour about Mayor Bloomberg's latest education proposals. He'd say he's working on behalf of the poor and minority kids of New York City with his proposals for teacher merit pay and all the rest. What does it mean to you for education to be a civil right in 2012? We want to hear from African-American parents. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692.